The name of our podcast, Tech Sequences, is really a mashup of two words, technology and consequences. We are fascinated by the consequences, intended or unintended, of the internet and related technologies for the way we live, play, and work. We are your hosts, Leslie Daigle and Alexa Rod. We started our careers at the dawn of the internet and have been friends, colleagues, and comrades in arms for the better part of 20 years. In this podcast, we examine the impact internet-related technologies have made or may make in our lives. I'm Alexa Rod.
And I'm Leslie Daigle.
Welcome to Tech Sequences. Everything we have learned, lived, and now remember is grounded in one unassuming fact. It took place in the physical world. And we may very well be the last generation for whom this distinction applies. Future generations will live, learn, and recall events that happened in a mix of the physical and virtual worlds. This, because extended reality technologies are fast becoming mainstream, redefining aspects of our lives as they do. Extended reality, or XR, as it's commonly referred to, is a superset which covers virtual reality, augmented reality, and mixed reality. It takes a human to computing screen interface and modifies it, either by immersion in a virtual environment, VR, or augmentation of the user's environment, AR, or a mix of both, MR. Although many of us have already experienced extended reality, such as viewing sports and music events using VR headsets, or art curated as an immersive encounter, XR is becoming far more pervasive for the younger generation. For them, it will redefine creativity and education, offering them alternative ways to learn by mimicking experiences hard to replicate in the real world, or turning abstract concepts into visualized models. Imagine, for example, learning how oxygen turns into energy from the viewpoint of a human red blood cell, or learning Mandarin by experiencing life in an AI-driven virtual Beijing, or learning robotics by manipulating and testing ideas in 3D. These possibilities of XR technologies are tempered by concerns over data collection and privacy, not to mention equitable access to the technology itself, particularly for the marginalized or underrepresented communities. If XR technologies are becoming an inevitable component in the lives of our young, what are the intended or unintended consequences, and how should we best prepare?
Our guest today is Alexa Hasse. Alexa is a PhD student at Tufts Elliott Pearson Department of Child Study and Human Development. Prior to this position, she worked at the Berkman Klein Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University. At Berkman Klein, Alexa served as the Director of Education on Youth and Media Team. On Youth and Media, Alexa focused on areas such as the skills youth need to thrive in our increasingly digital world, the ways youth engage in and interact with and are impacted by artificial intelligence, risks to online safety, including cyberbullying, and the design of educational tools about the digital environment that can be used across varying contexts of learning and teaching. Welcome, Alexa.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here today and to share my learnings around young people and digital technologies, including extended reality technologies.
Great. So you are co-author on a study called Youth in Extended Reality, an initial exploration of augmented, virtual, and mixed realities. Can you tell us a little bit about this study, who sponsored it, and what interested you most about the topic?
Absolutely. So our paper, Youth in Extended Reality, sought to really showcase some of the youth and media team's initial learnings and questions around the potential benefits and challenges that extended reality technologies may present for young people, specifically those ages 12 to 18. And the paper also looked at concrete XR examples in domains like learning, physical and mental health, and diversity, equity, and inclusion. And happy to speak more about XR as it applies to learning.
Sure. I mean, that certainly sounds like an interesting area to explore. And what do you think are the main challenges that we need to address in implementing XR in an educational context?
I think there are a number of challenges. And in our paper, we've really divided them into three buckets. So first is accessibility. You know, internet connectivity is needed to leverage XR technologies, which may prevent a significant number of people from using this technology. And we often associate XR with expensive VR headsets, which can be really financially inaccessible. At the same time, there are less costly options like Google Cardboard and free and low cost AR and VR apps that youth can use on their phones. And additionally, in terms of accessibility, XR is more reliant compared to other technologies on individuals' capacity to control their physical motion. So how can we address these physical issues for students in different learning settings? A second area of concern is privacy. And some concerns related to privacy and data protection are resonant with broader concerns around digitally networked technologies, while others are specific to AR, to XR. For example, like many digitally networked technologies, XR has the capacity to collect, analyze, and monetize users' data. And given that children and youth are often leaders in exploring new technologies, they might experience privacy-related risks before strategies are implemented in the classroom or informal learning settings to really mitigate these concerns. And research shows that young people, like many adults, often lack an adequate understanding of the processes of data collection and commercial profiling and marketing to which they can be subject to. And so in addition to collecting data like young people's location or product preferences, XR can gather huge amounts of data on nonverbal behavior, like facial expressions or eye gaze. And actually spending just 20 minutes in a VR simulation can capture just under 2 million recordings of body language. So within the educational space specifically, researchers have used nonverbal data gathered through VR to estimate the number of mistakes made while learning a task or to predict test scores. So a young person's future, from the colleges they're admitted to potential employment opportunities, could be affected by the nonverbal data that XR systems collect. And information collected through XR will also really bolster companies' efforts to target advertising to young people. One study, for instance, showed that data around head movements in VR is correlated with how positively someone rates the content in a given simulation. So these are some privacy concerns. And finally, a third area of concern that we've identified is around safety. So as with other network technologies like mobile phones or tablets, some people using XR may experience eye strain. But unlike other internet-enabled tools, XR could be associated with side effects like nausea, dizziness, seizures. So how do we really address those side effects for a child in a classroom who might feel nauseous after going through an XR activity, for instance? And XR also may create another space for youth to be cyberbullied in, which may take the form of environmental bullying, like throwing physical objects at someone, or physical bullying, unwanted physical contact. And given the immersive nature of XR, I think it has really to be further explored if these types of harassment will be experienced as more intense versus cyberbullying via text message or via chat. And so these three areas of accessibility, privacy, and safety, and how they apply to the classroom are really three areas that are quite important in terms of challenges and concerns to be addressed in this space.
You said a lot just in that. There's so much to unpack, but I'm just going to focus on the safety issue and psychological safety. There was just recently in the metaverse, Meta had given a couple of users a chance to experience the metaverse. And very shortly after that, I don't know whether you saw or not, that some users reported harassment. This is, you know, sexual harassment within immersive, you know, XR experience. So given that cyberbullying is such a big aspect of our children's lives, I can't think of anybody who hasn't in one way or another experienced that. And we still have not been able to get our arms around how to manage that. To what extent do you think cyberbullying is going to be also reflected in an XR setting? And are there any ways that we could manage it or mitigate it?
That's a great question. And cyberbullying is an area I'm actually really interested in. And our youth and media team has written a paper called Youth and Cyberbullying, Another Look, which actually explores how to define cyberbullying and ways to prevent and mitigate it. And so I think that cyberbullying will become an issue in the XR space. And I'm wondering to what extent existing strategies to reduce and prevent online bullying will apply to extended reality. So to take an example from our literature review, we've looked at a number of school-based cyberbullying intervention programs, and they had a few important things in common. And the first was that they had very structured learning modules. Secondly, they focused on the bystander and victims' perspectives. Thirdly, they emphasized social emotional skill development, like fostering resiliency. And finally, they all took a holistic approach to combating cyberbullying, involving teachers, school administrators, parents, and so forth, and in some cases, youth themselves. And so I wonder to what extent those strategies can be applied to extended reality. And I think one area there might be just in terms of implementing extended reality in the classroom, almost the cognitive load that it, not only the cost in terms of money of these XR systems, but the cognitive load of just learning how to use XR technologies and then learning how to teach them and then to also address problems in these spaces. And I think that will be an important point going forward.
It's not even just to learn how to use the technology like an you know, menu-driven or interface or whatever, I imagine. I imagine it's also sort of some of that what's real and what isn't, what matters, what doesn't, right? You know, if I touch you in the physical world, I know that's wrong. You know, if I have an avatar that touches your avatar, is that still wrong? And why is it still wrong? I think the answer is yes, it's still wrong. But, you know, I think it's got to be a little challenging to figure out how to make the mapping between our norms and expectations in the real world and carry them into XR.
Exactly. Yes. And actually some XR experiences have been developed that specifically focus on bullying. For instance, VR Action Lab by Harmony Labs looks at how virtual reality can help youth, particularly middle school students, become upstanders when faced with bullying scenarios, and even includes a curriculum for teachers. And so I think that that's really important in guiding the future direction of classrooms and navigating these emerging technologies.
When I was looking at XR, one of the things that struck me was my own experience, you know, going to college. I was in organic chem, and I can't tell you how difficult it was for me to visualize the benzene ring. I couldn't. There were models that you could buy, but they always came with a disclaimer. This is really not what it looks like. And so trying to imagine chemical reactions and bonds when you can't really visualize something, for somebody who may be a way to learn for them is to visualize, is so difficult. So in one way, I think it provides a tremendous amount of opportunity for people who have learning disabilities or who simply learn a different way to have an opportunity to now learn, perhaps on an equal footing with others. But at the same time, I also wonder whether this deepens the divide. You talked about diversity and inclusion and access to technology. It is just not simply access to the VR headsets or the technology itself. There's a large debate now looming about access to broadband. All of these technologies require broadband access, and where we have rural communities, where more likely more disadvantaged or socioeconomically challenged folks live, we still have to start with the basics there. How do we actually scale these challenges? How do we solve the problems for XR and diversity inclusion? And I think you had in your writings had some ideas of how XR can benefit diversity and inclusion.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. From our review of existing XR examples, we found that there are experiences that can really help young people learn more about different communities, celebrate their identity, or really cultivate empathy for those from other backgrounds. And so just to take some concrete examples, I Am a Man by Derek Ham is a VR experience that lets users see historical events around the civil rights movement through the lens of African Americans. The VR Action Lab that I just discussed that addresses bullying is another example that will help to cultivate this empathy. And 6x9 is a virtual reality experience of solitary confinement developed by The Guardian, which allows users to be put inside a U.S. solitary confinement prison cell and to immerse them in this psychological turmoil often associated with this confinement. So there are these experiences that can help young people learn about different backgrounds, different contexts, different cultures. But I completely agree that there is a digital technology access gap, and there really remains these pressing questions around how can we bring XR technologies to low-income classrooms and communities, and how can we empower youth, particularly youth from underrepresented communities, to be part of the design and deployment of XR technologies. And I think those are important questions moving forward.
What about, I mean, Alexa mentioned examples of things that, you know, we've experienced and we feel confident could have been illustrated a different way with XR. But I imagine that there must be ways, there have already been even ways to sort of create new ways of representing material, course material, using XR that wouldn't be possible with just sort of books and movies, which is how I'm old enough to remember classes being.
Movies? You had movies? I didn't have movies.
There's that little cart that they would wheel into the classroom on. Never mind.
How fortunate you were.
Exactly. I think that XR can really expand the range of activities that young people can learn from. in a hands-on way. So to take some examples, these technologies can allow young people to, for a biology course, travel inside the human body and explore cells and really turn abstract concepts into more concrete experiences. Or to take another example, they can really allow for new affordances that create opportunities for youth to learn in ways that haven't been feasible with other technologies. And a great example of that is in architecture and architectural design. And one particular case is the 100,000 New Trees in Oslo project by the Oslo School of Architecture and Design, the Municipality of Oslo, and the research company Uderu. And this project looks at how AR can promote youth participation around urban planning. And in the study, young people ages 14 to 16 used an AR app to simulate the planting of trees in Oslo, Norway. And a follow-up step will be to coordinate the AR-based youth designs with actual tree planting. And I think this is a particularly great example because it involves the youth perspective, and it really engages youth to ensure that the project aligns with young people's interests and needs and backgrounds. And I think that youth participation is essential in the design and deployment of XR and digital technologies more broadly.
One thing Leslie mentioned, and I think it's fascinating to, and I don't have any answers, obviously, but it's really the distinction between our identities, our physical identity, our real identity, and then the virtual identity, because they're not always the same. And what happens to us in the virtual world versus what happens to us in the physical world. And in the virtual world, if someone slashes you with a sword, you're not going to feel pain, or at least I would assume so. In the real world, you would. Have you guys done any kind of research in terms of human sensitivities? Does that dull some of your sensitivities, for example, to violence or to certain types of interactions? If and what are the policy or legal ramifications with respect to, what is okay for your virtual world avatar versus what is okay for your physical self?
We haven't explored that particular question in regard to XR, but we have looked at that a bit in terms of artificial intelligence. And so thinking about just reviewing the literature and thinking about how really these AI systems, like in video games, the increasingly interactive nature of AI-powered video game characters, which can almost lead users to feel as if they are a part of, as one article phrases it, a functioning social world. And we had an open question around, well, how will that really impact young people's interpersonal skills and social emotional development? And I think that's definitely a question that can also be further explored in the XR space. How will interactions in XR affect young people's social skill development? And yeah, I think that's a really fascinating area.
Have you looked at, for somebody who is physically handicapped, right? If they're not able to walk, XR provides an opportunity for them to experience something perhaps that they couldn't do in real life. Has that been part of your research? And if so, what have you found with respect to the impact that it may have on their own self, on their own psyche?
That's an area that I would personally love to learn more about. And I think that XR can open new opportunities for exploration, for to sort of immerse yourself in different parts of the world. Like One instance that we looked at in our paper is an experience called Parallel Parks by New Horizons, which helps people, especially those with a disability or those with mobility issues, to see previously inaccessible parts of the world. And this is specific to Australia, like the Great Barrier Reef and so forth. And I think it really does open up so many opportunities. I think I would love to learn further about that area.
So going back to the Norway project, it struck me that one of the things that's particularly important there is that, you know, there's a certain age of youth that where doing is all important, right? I mean, it's like they're ready to get out there and do stuff, but they keep being told, no, you know, you're not old enough, or you can't really do that because you might break something, or you can't do it well enough, or you can't whatever. And in a virtual realm, if you break it, you can reassemble the bits. So there's the possibility of, you know, if well done, you can actually engage in real activities in the virtual world and then see them translated into the real world, mm-hmm. Without having that argument of, you know, not yet, you can't, for this, that, or the other reason. At least, I mean, I've always been fond of building things and making things, so maybe that's my own particular bent, but.
I think, yes, and in our paper, Youth and XR, we highlight a few concrete examples of how youth can create their own XR experiences, and I think it would be interesting to see how the creation of these experiences impacts their creativity or their literacy skills or emotional development. And I think that will be really interesting to see what learning opportunities that affords. And you're right to really see this actionable content that they then create. It will be fascinating. Right. Yeah.
Speaking of your paper, in your paper, you say that using XR in education improve some outcomes such as enhanced understanding, better memory retention, or even motivation to learn. Why do you think that is? What is it about XR technology that, for example, increases a student's motivation to learn or their memory retention that wasn't available with the technologies that we have now?
Mm-hmm. I think that part of it is that it can be more engaging for young people, and especially if an XR experience is designed with youth themselves, really tailored to their interests and backgrounds and needs. And I think that the immersive nature of the experience can be particularly beneficial in learning. For instance, there's emerging research that immersion may be useful in learning a second language. And VR, for instance, can help simulate an immersive language experience. So to take a concrete example, the Mandarin Project, which is by Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute and IBM Research, is a mixed reality experience that brings students to the streets of Beijing or to a Chinese restaurant, and users get to talk with street vendors, order food, and the environment even has different AI capabilities that respond to users to make it even more interactive. And so I think the immersive interactive nature can absolutely be beneficial for learning.
I'm picturing Blade Runner as you say that.
Yes.
What about the AI implications? When you were describing the fact that XR combined with AI can pick up so many various data points and be able to predict, for example, performance on a test. In a way, it's both exciting because you can, so much of the education is really struggling to understand how a student learns and trying to customize the material in a way that they could it'd be more acceptable to them. It could be better for them to absorb. But at the same time, it's scary how much data. I mean, we are already in a data collection society. It's scary that so much more data is now going to be collected on not just us as individual adults, but on kids and what it can say about how and how malleable they are. So does that in a way allow companies who own these technologies to now really navigate and create an environment where, you know, these kids can be more prone to buy this product or be attracted to that service?
I think that's a definite concern, yes, with these commercial risks and the ability to really collect and monetize and analyze user data, create these profiles of children and young people. And I think part of the solution there, but I think it's very much a multi-stakeholder approach that's needed that involves private companies, non-governmental organizations, educators, parents, and importantly, youth themselves. But I think part of that solution is education and really teaching young people about these privacy concerns and about the ways that companies can collect and use their data. And so the youth and media team has actually created a repository on a platform called the Digital Citizenship Plus Resource Platform that has over 100 educational tools that can be used to learn and teach about the digital world. And a number of them focus on privacy and how young people can think about how to protect their online presence, think about the digital story that they're leaving online, about the collection of personal data. And so I think education is a really crucial component in addressing these privacy concerns.
Well, that's quite a range of things to explore. I mean, it sounds like a brave new world, but I think it's more like it sounds like a bunch of brave new worlds that we get to build and explore. So thank you very much for the exploration of that space with us today. And it's been a great conversation. Thank you.
Wonderful.
Thank you, Alexa.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to this TechSequences podcast. We are Leslie Daigle and Alexa Rod. You can reach us by email, techsequences@techsequences.org. We'd love to hear from you to know what you thought about this episode or ideas for future episodes. TechSequences. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook and subscribe through your favorite podcasting service.